Hello, everybody. I'm Alex, and I am so glad that you could join me for Happy Hour on this Family Tree Podcast, episode 202. So, folks, tonight I have not Shane joining me, but a very good friend of mine, a book club mate, a former podcast guest, and a podcaster, an awesome podcaster in her own right. We have Renee Rena. So I'm going to loop her in a second, and we are going to talk all about Jonathan Haidt's new book, The Anxious Generation, because like a lot of parents, we're kind of thinking about the impacts of technology on kids and where that is leading us. Hello. Fancy seeing
How's
you
it
here.
Going?
Oh, it's going, buddy. It's going. How's it going on your end?
Oh, pretty good. Just recorded with my sister. It was so funny.
Was it insufferable?
It was.
No, that's good. Well, thank you so much for coming on this last minute. It's honestly such a joy. I was going to sit here and talk to myself, and I was like, you know what would be better than that is bringing on a friend. So I was like, Renee, like first thing this morning, got to school, and I was like, all right, Renee, let's see if we can get her on. But I didn't want to put pressure on you, and you were like, yeah, I'm in. And I'm so stoked about that because I only see you at book clubs, which is super fun. And then we chat books.
I know. And it was perfect timing because I was like, I already planned on recording tonight with my sister. So I was like, oh, that works out perfectly. I'll just stay in my little chair and keep talking.
You do look very cute and posted up and cozy right now.
Yeah.
No, it's good. I'm not as cozy, but I do have a big piece of cake, old birthday cake that it's frozen. So I'm just waiting for it to thaw, but it's okay.
Nice.
So, Renee, I want to get you on here. We're going to talk about Jonathan Haidt's, I don't know how to say his last name properly, Jonathan Haidt's The Anxious Generation. So yes. I haven't read the book yet. I purchased it. I'm about to read it. You and I both, in prep for this, we listened to him on Dr. Becky's Good Inside, and you heard him on Rogan, but have you read the book?
I haven't. It's been sitting out, and one of the things that I'm trying to work on is reading nonfiction books during the day, like blocking off like an hour to sit and read, because that's what like sparks my thoughts and sparks creativity. And, you know, I get ideas and I reflect on my own life. I reflect on like my relationships. So that's one of the first books that I want to read, but I think because the book just came out, mm-hmm. he's been on lots of podcasts recently, and I started following him on social media. So I'm like getting into his content and what he's all about, mm-hmm. but I'm definitely going to read the book.
I'm dying to. So this book is essentially about what he calls the great rewiring of childhood. It basically talks about how like the millennials were a little bit in this shift, because this change happened during our childhood. It started to shift. Whereas in the 80s, everything was very play-centered. And then in the 1990s, it started shifting from that because parents were like, ooh, I don't want my kids running around outside without any parental supervision. They're going to get snatched up by a pedophile, things like that. And then how that really shifted in the early 2000s and the 2010s with smartphones. And mm-hmm. how that changed everything. But Renee, before we get into it, I want to get an idea of your childhood. I want little Renee. What did little Renee's childhood look like?
I had, like, there's no complaints on my end. I feel actually so lucky that I was not in this group that grew up with a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Did we watch TV? Yes. It was like TGIF. You're watching like Family Matters, you know? Yeah. Every day after school, I was watching Saved by the Bell.
Hell yeah. Breaker High.
Yeah. On the weekends. But it's so different nowadays. Mm-hmm. And even when Milo puts on YouTube and the fact that he can like flip around really quickly. Like we didn't have that option. It was like, you're going to watch something. You're going to have commercials. Mm-hmm. It's like very much a different experience when you're watching a screen nowadays compared to before. So there was no Netflix where it was like, oh, I'm bored of this, moving on to the next. Like, no, if you put on a movie, you're invested in that movie and you're watching it.
And like you even said, commercials. I mean, I think our experience with TV growing up was more an exercise in patience than it is today. Because today you could be like, oh, fuck it, I don't like it. Or, oh, I hate this, whatever. And just change it. I know I have a friend who watches movies, like how she consumes movies, is she has the movie playing in the top screen, and in the bottom screen, she has something random going on. And then her brain flicks between the two things.
Yeah.
That gives me a headache to think about.
Yeah.
It gives me such a
and
headache.
And I, like you were saying about the play as well, mm-hmm. I really noticed this now that Milo's getting to an age where maybe he would be playing outdoors on his own, like yeah. soon, you know? There's like, we live in a neighborhood, there's lots of families. Ask me if I've ever seen kids playing outside.
Have you?
No. But you know what's funny is our old neighborhood was all young families, and there was always kids playing outside. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really nice. Like all the neighborhood kids mm-hmm. are at the park, they're in someone's yard, they're playing basketball, hockey, like whatever it is. And that's how my childhood was. Like mm-hmm. I was playing with the neighborhood kids until it was time to eat dinner. And then it was back outside until it was time to go in because it's getting dark. We're like making cabins in the woods. We would, you know, in the springtime when the road is full of gravel
yes.
from like they gravel the roads during the winter so that it's not slippery. We used to take a broom and make rollerblade trails in the streets,
that's
like
the
with
best.
The gravel that was on the road and like rollerblade around, like endless keeping ourselves busy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like Jonathan, he talks a lot about like imaginative play, but also unstructured play,
so
you know?
He's huge. Yeah, unstructured and unsupervised. Because what I really kind of made me stop and think, because it's so at odds with how I parent, and I want your take on it too. He talks about how kids need unsupervised play. So like an adult not even really watching you at all. And if there's conflict, the kids are not resolving that conflict on their own. The adult is not resolving the conflict for the kids. The kids are going to duke it out verbally or whatever on their own. And then that sets them up for dealing with social situations in the future. And I'm thinking about mm-hmm. my own parenting and I'm like, ooh, like even when we have play dates at my house, if there's a conflict that arises, I mediate. Every time I mediate, say, okay, you say sorry. Now you say sorry. And now you guys share the toy or whatever it is. And I'm like, I don't know how I would stop myself from intervening, but I definitely see the benefit to that. Are you an intervener?
So we've had a few play dates. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like thinking back to things like as soon as like there's any kind of, because as parents, if there's any kind of negative emotion, negative situation happening, we're just like immediately want to stop it.
Yes.
But
yes.
It is like when he explained that on Good Inside, I was like, wow, that you don't necessarily think about that part of it. We're like, oh, kids need to play to develop, you know, like whatever skills. And we're mm-hmm. thinking about those things, but we're not necessarily thinking about the conflict and them. Because think about when we were kids, all the stuff that we went through as kids, you start to learn like, who you like, who you dislike, like how you like to be treated, how you don't like to be treated.
Yes.
Like,
and the reasons why behind it, which I think is so important when developing your own group of friends in high school and as you get older. It's like, why don't I like this kid? Oh, yeah, it's because they always want to do this bad thing that makes me feel uncomfortable. But you learn those things on your own, which makes it more impactful rather than an adult being like, don't do that. Stay safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know. Because in the real world, there's not always going to be someone handling conflicts for
never.
You know?
No, because so
his previous book, which I'm also interested in, which he put out in 2019, I think, was called something about like coddling the American mind or the kids' minds.
And it was about how universities essentially now have to coddle university academic students because they're unable to essentially have different, I haven't read it like you, but like, I believe that it's about they can't have like differences in opinions and they just can't react to anything that they don't like. So that their professors then need to coddle them.
Everybody is afraid to say, so this was more of his conversation. I've only listened to like a half hour of it and it's 2 hours long, his conversation with Joe Rogan. But it was about that, like how even on social media, people only one opinion is the popular mm-hmm. opinion. And so that's the only thing that's kind of acceptable. And mm-hmm. as soon as you go against that, you will be like, what is it, like put out to pasture? Like, is that a proper saying? Oh. Like, you will be like shunned, you know, like shamed. Like,
yeah.
And it's like that in the parenting space. Oh, as soon 100%. As you have an opinion, yes, that's not what, like going with the grain, mm-hmm. so to speak, you are then like attacked. Absolutely. And it's the same, like, so Jonathan, I believe he's a professor, like teaching courses. And that's what he was saying. Like, it gets so bad because at any point, a professor can say something that, you know, maybe they're like sparking an idea or they're just like trying to create conversation. But if a student doesn't like it, now it's like front page news on the New York Times because a professor said something that's going against, you know, popular opinion or whatever. So it's a very different time, but that's a whole other conversation. This book is more about the smartphones and social media.
Yeah, but it all, I think, does tie in together, all of his ideas on like life and development and growing up and parents' roles in that. Because he's essentially saying, like, we've given our kids way too much supervision in the real world and like zero supervision, not enough supervision in the online world. And it's just mm-hmm. leading to a slew of mental health problems, including, you know, the coddling of the university students and everything. So I threw down some stats actually that I wanted to share because it is mind blowing. And I was trying to research this and I just wanted to get my own head wrapped around it. So since 2010, anxiety has increased by 134%, depression by 106%, ADHD by 72%, bipolar by 57%, anorexia by 100%, substance abuse by 33%, schizophrenia by 67%, and I don't have the percentages for self-harm and suicide, but those have gone up too. And I even know from working with teenagers that those have gone up because it's scary, but you will see, I mean, so many more kids, teenagers than I saw in high school with visible cut marks. And when I was in high school, like, did you ever, I don't know if you ever saw this, but like kids would hide it and they'd wear like long sleeves and things like that. But I will often see kids now like rolling up their sleeves and kind of, I'm not going to say showing it off. I don't know a better word for that, but they are happy to talk about it and things like that. Like I had a server serving me recently, a young girl, and her arms were just mutilated with scars from cutting. And I was going to throw up. I was going to cry. I was going to hug her. I didn't know how to react. And I couldn't do anything. I just like sat there and looked at the table and I could barely communicate with her because I just didn't know how to. And I was so worried for her. You know what I mean? It was a scary thing. And I was trying to think like, how can all this come from us not letting our kids play enough? But then it all comes back to those social situations, right? And not knowing, I think, how to make friends that are good for us, good for whatever, and just making good decisions. Did you ever make a decision as a kid where immediately you faced terrible consequences?
Like all the time in school, like socially, like you start to learn. It almost like, that's how you develop. And it's interesting because when kids get smartphones, typically is right around like puberty, like because he was giving like the timeline of development when it comes to brain growth. And you know, it's very rapid in the early years, but then around age 6-7 it kind of slows mm-hmm. down, and then right when it's like 12-13 it like ramps up again during puberty. And that's usually when people get smartphones. But one of the things about smartphones is if you're on the smartphone all the time, like, did you hear the stats for the number of hours in a day?
Nine hours.
Real.
And that's excluding school. So then you think of school when they're given a device to do research on, or maybe in elementary school, they get to watch TV while they have their lunch. Then what is it? 10, 11? Like that's half the day.
The wild thing is that, so just to finish that point, if kids are on screens all the time, tablet, smartphone, whatever. And this was my argument for screen time as well. It's not necessarily that there's something wrong with like the tablet and watching Paw Patrol. It's if they're doing it so much, what are they missing out on now?
Exactly.
And that's kind of like the smartphone thing as well. But the added issues when it comes to social media, when it like for their mental health. So if their phones are with them at school, school is where they get the bulk of their socialization, you know, interacting with peers, playing sports, playing outside, doing all that. Now you drive past a school and it's just like a group of five kids sitting in a circle staring at their phones. Like they're not even getting that. I go to the mall and there's like tables in the food court of young people, like young people sitting in the food court with like a smoothie, just staring at their phones together.
It's insane. Give me some good old fashioned cafeteria bullying rather than virtual Instagram bullying.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Okay. So I told you I did a survey today. So I surveyed about 100 teenagers today in prep for this, just like roughly, like I didn't write down actual numbers. Oh my God, my hair's doing something crazy. So, about 95% of them got their phones when they started high school. So like in grade nine, when they were 14 years old. A couple of them got them a little bit earlier. And it was, they were all 15 and nobody did not have a phone at this point. And every single one of them had a smartphone. And this is not even taking into consideration their economic backgrounds, because I can guarantee a lot of them come from backgrounds where it's really difficult for mom and dad to get their kid a phone, yet they're doing it and they're putting so much on the line for these phones. And then I asked the students, okay, do the benefits of having a phone outweigh the negative outcomes? Like, does it make you happier? Does it make you feel more included? Does it make you, your days go by with, you know, with more positivity? Or does it make you feel anxious, depressed, more lonely, more prone to getting in fights with people? I had five kids out of 100 say that it was positive. 95 of them said that it was negative. And this, they've only had phones for the last 2 years. And they already...
It's wild to me that they pick up on the negative effects.
Oh my God. Like when MSN first came out, before I even had a smart, before I even had a flip phone, right? Because we're talking about back then, olden days, pre, you know, internet everywhere. And I mean, this is on the internet, but I used to use MSN Messenger. Yeah. So like there was ICQ, AOL, whatever. I used MSN. And in grade seven, okay, so I'm having like an MSN chat with one of my best friends and we're talking about something like inane. And then she, unbeknownst to me, prints out the conversation after changing the dialogue. Brings it to school the next day before I get there, shows people, made it seem like I was saying bad things about people. I don't know why she did it. I don't know if she was trying to do it for attention, for shits, experimenting with like pre-Photoshop, Photoshop. I don't know. But she did this. And people are saying like, Alex, like, what were you saying on MSN last night? I was like, I don't know, nothing. Like, why? And they're like, well, look at this. And then they shove things in. And she was like saying I had crushes on certain boys that I didn't have crushes on. And that kind of thing is so humiliating. So it's damaging. You know, like a Tuesday, I'm in grade seven and I come to school and all of a sudden the whole class is talking about me and what I said, even though I didn't say that. So immediately it's like a slap in the face of what the internet can be like. And it's already, I mean, we're past changing MSN conversations. I mean, now we're at like faking entire realistic scenarios, right? Which is scary. We're at Photoshop. We're at everything. And it's like, I think about these girls going through puberty. They're smelling bad. They've got pimples. They don't know what's going on. Like my hormones are still so thrown off as a 35-year-old. And they're in it. And they're getting all this shoved down their throats. And I don't know how I would have fared if I was on social media at their age.
No, I know. I know. I am so thankful. I think Facebook started when I was in undergrad for me. That was just like Facebook, and it was not like social media is today. It was like you only had friends and family. You just put up like photo albums. It wasn't like social media like we know mm-hmm. today. I'm so happy. Like, I feel so lucky about that. But I also feel lucky that our kids are at an age where I think by the time they get to 12, 13, things are going to look completely different. And I feel so badly for parents and young adults / teens who have gone through this mm-hmm. decade of
experiment.
Because we didn't know. Yes, they're literally guinea pigs. And I feel so bad because mm-hmm. when I talk to physicians who see patients all the time who are struggling with stuff like this, it's really hard to reverse. Like, it's hard to get out of it.
Yeah. Oh my God. And, you know, I think about the people that are online, and you know, we talk about them sometimes. It's that like just bully other people online, and that's their MO, and that's like all they do. And I think about it, I'm like, are these the same people that were changing my MSN conversations as a kid? Like, who, you know, to wrap up so much of your identity, I think, in online negativity, because you and I have both wrapped up a lot of our identity in being online. And that's something I wanted to touch on too, because I mean, I didn't start this until I was 30 and adult, fully formed brain, you know, so I can deal with seeing people with different bodies than mine. I'm just like, okay, block. I don't want to see you make me feel bad about myself. And then it's done, out of sight, out of mind, whatever. I don't think about how hot they are. And it's nice because I can kind of handle that. I can get on top of it. But kids don't have that same awareness, I don't think. And then it's like, okay, how do I then reconcile the fact that I'm online all the time? My kids know that, yet I'm not going to want them to be. And I wanted your take on this because I have no idea how – like, I don't know how to approach that.
So I'm trying to – I am so aware – every time there is a cell phone out in Milo's presence now, mm-hmm. like I'm so annoying.
Is this
like,
a new thing?
This has been like in the works for a while because I just started to notice it. And I, it's probably because I became interested in this topic and I'm thinking so much about, at first it was like just thinking about teens and smartphones, but now I'm thinking about my own use like of phones and what that looks like for Milo and how am I going to be like, no, like social media is bad. Like, I don't want you on it till you're 16. And that's my job and what I do all the time. But also just the very simple fact of if he is in the room with us and we're like this,
yeah,
like that breaks my heart. And I know I just talked about this. What's today? Wednesday? Mm-hmm. No. So on, no. Today's Tuesday. So on Thursday, my solo episode, I'm talking about going to Milo's swimming lessons and how excited are kids to be doing like swimming practice. Maybe they're on the soccer field. Maybe they're in music class, whatever it is. And if you're a parent in the stands or on the sidelines mm-hmm. watching, your child is so excited that you're there. Think about when they're at home. It's like, mom, look at this. Mom, look at this. Look at this. Like, they just want you to see everything. And so I'm very mindful at Milo's swimming lessons to not even take my phone out of my bag. But how sad is it when I look around and like 75% of the parents are like this and their little kids are in the pool doing things. And like every time they do a starfish or something, they're like looking to their parent and their parents like on their phone. It breaks my heart. And so now I'm so aware of it in the home too. Mm-hmm. Like when Milo is home from school and my husband's home, like sometimes my husband will be like, even today, new pants for Milo or like a belt or something. He's like, oh, he like wants to look it up to see if we can order him new pants. And I'm like, put your fucking phone down. Like, do it later. Like,
it's stop. So annoying. It's so annoying. And here, I'm bad at this, Renee, because I might pull, Shane will not admit that he looks at his phone in front of the kids more than I do. He's like, you're always on your phone. I'm like, no, I am on it. yes, always kind of, but I am also, I try not to be on it too much in front of the kids, especially if we're interacting or especially if we're doing something or even watching something as a family. Like if we're having, I don't know, if it's even after school and I'm like, okay, we'll put on this show and we're sitting on the couch together, I'll watch it with the kids. I'll make comments on it. And then he might pull his phone out to do something, even if it's quick. And then I'll just like, I have a problem with saying things. So I just shoot the dirtiest, filthiest look that I can his way. And he'll be like, what? And then I'll just be like, you know. And he's like, you were just on your phone 10 minutes ago. And I'll be like, yeah, but it wasn't when I had the movie on. We're supposed to be watching this. And I need to get better at that. But I also need to be even more conscious of myself in this. And because I think for so many of us, it's like second nature. Because I mean, the phone, it's like communication with my family, communication with friends, communication with work stuff, everything for work. And that's both of us, right? And then it's like, not only is it communication for you and I, it's not just communication for work on our phone. It's our also our actual work, all the edit, like I do all my video editing on my phone.
Yeah.
I do all my posting from my phone. Like I do nothing from a desktop. So that's a huge issue. And I really try to do it when I have time away from the kids, or I'll try to go into the office and do those things. But sometimes it's not always like, if you're a freaking parent, sometimes it's not possible. And I'll be doing something and doing work at the same time, because it's the only way I can get everything done.
I think there's something to be said about being intentional with it. Like you said, like sometimes I have to post brand partnerships at like 7 p.m. or something. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go to my room. Like I need a half hour, remove yourself from the situation. Or if, you know, Milo's watching a YouTube thing, like letting him know, okay, I'm going to be doing some work here for like 20 minutes and then we can play Battleship or whatever it is. Being intentional with it. And then also removing your phone from your presence. Like I set up that phone box. So
are you using it frequently?
We used it for like a week straight, and then it was March break for 2 weeks for us. So then it was just like we were traveling in a way, but I brought it back out because it's so nice, because then you're not just mindlessly picking up your phone. You physically, you have to really have to look something up or contact someone or do something, because you have to now go and get it instead of it just sitting there and you picking it up constantly. So it is a really nice thing to have, like put your phone in a box in a separate room, just so that, like, we don't want these little people growing up thinking that these phones are the most important thing in the world.
100%. I once had Lucy say to me, "Mommy, like, put down your phone. I want to tell you something." And I was like, so embarrassed by that. This was like a year ago, and I was way more conscious of it after that. But like that, I felt so bad, because I'm like, I try to be so mindful of my parenting in every which way. Honest to God, every which way. And even that, like, I was doing work. You know what I mean? So it's like I was trying to help the family in a way. And she tells me things, you know, 23 hours a day. She's yapping at me. In my ear. And it's like, it's great, but I don't want her to feel like she's second place to my stupid phone. It's so stupid.
But that's why I think being intentional with it, as opposed to trying to do two things half-assed.
Yeah.
Because that's where parents get stuck. They're like trying to write emails, but also be involved in Play-Doh. And it's like, no, instead of doing both things half-assed, set aside some time, like set a boundary. I'm doing this for 20 minutes and then I'm going to come do your Play-Doh. And then it's less of a, it's like you've let it be known that this is what's happening, as opposed to like, oh, she's just never paying attention to me. You know, like it's totally different vibe.
So I think that's such a smart way to do it. And, you know, I was thinking about the other actionable, like, solutions to this, if there are solutions. And so I wrote them down. And I was trying to think, because not all of them are super doable for me. So like the first one was more playing time with other kids. That's doable in a sense, but we do not have, we are the youngest people on my street. My street is all retirees. And then us, there are no kids here. But then Lucy's friend that lives a few blocks away, it is madness. Like I can't drive my car to the house with almost hitting a child. But then on that hand, it's like they're running amok. These kids are too crazy. Like they're literally running back and forth across the street. But it's great because it's like, you know, an age group from like grade 8 to junior kindergarten, all these kids playing together, just going from one neighbor's backyard to the next. That's what my childhood was like. But then I do get nervous. I'm like thinking, do I need to yell at these kids that they need to look both ways? Like, is there somebody watching them? And I'm sure there is, but it makes me, like, Renee, like, I'm getting visibly, like, itchy thinking about this because it makes me nervous.
I know.
I don't know how to get out of that because I was raised in that world, too, even though my parents let me outside. They were, I don't know, they had a pretty good handle on things. I would like to know
when it comes to playing outside and play dates and things like that, I'm going to ask my mom, like, what age was I when I would just like go play outside, you know, because our kids are 5.
They're
like
still
your
young.
Oldest and mine. Mm-hmm. Like that's senior kindergarten. Like it's the one thing is like, I think a lot of school time is unstructured.
100. And I love that they do that. And it's free play. And then you pick a center, you get to pretend play with your buddies all day. Then you do some structured stuff and it's great. I think kindergarten's like laid out really well, actually. With all that playtime, because that's what they need. You don't want them to start hating school before they even really start school.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good one. Another thing I was, you know, listening to Jonathan and Dr. Becky were talking about was not giving smartphones as their first phone and don't give any phones until like high school and then no socials until they're at least at the beginning of high school. And if you can hold off later, then that's great. And I was reading, like, there's people that are raising the age of internet legality or whatever. They want to raise it from 13 when you can sign up for social media to 16. And I'm like, why isn't everybody behind this? Like, why is this even something that needs a push to get through? Because I'm 100% behind the social media. Why the hell does my kid need freaking TikTok? You know what I mean? So you can sell them shit.
And the way he was explaining how to do that, like, think about it. Don't tell me that's not possible. Like, we do our banking online. Like, we do everything online. You're telling me that social media platforms can't verify everyone's age and identity. Another thing that he was talking about on Joe Rogan was that something like 75% of accounts, this might have just been on Twitter, were bots, like robots.
I believe that.
So that's now crazy, if you implement a law where people have to be verified as an actual person with an address, verify their identity with an ID, their age, now it gets rid of the bots and all that concerning stuff. And you can, you know, manage what age you're going to allow onto the platform.
And really, and if we're doing that, if we're already going those lengths, why don't we also take it one step further and eliminate any sex offenders from registering? Like, if, you know, one of
That's interesting.
Like, why couldn't they do that? If you had, like, when I sign up for Instagram, like, Shane got locked out of his account last week and then had to give his passport and then do, like, a 360 of his head to prove that it was him. And it was like a crazy thing. But if we can do that and verify people to that extent, why can't we have like, okay, you're a convicted sex offender, pedophile, trying to lure kids online. Why can't we ban these people and then take steps to make our online spaces safer for younger people? You know what I mean?
I never thought about that.
I just thought
like
of it now.
You can't live within a certain distance from a school. But you can go on social media? Like what?
Yes. Yes. Well, because that's half the stuff he was saying in the interview. He's like, parents are so scared that everybody's a pedophile in real life. But he's like, the pedophiles don't hang out at the playground or teach Cub Scouts anymore. They're on social media because it's easier. And it makes sense. Like it makes so much sense. So I think that that's got to be a possibility. And then the other thing that I want to ask you about, because I like this idea. I might feel like bad broaching it with a group of adults, but it's like talk to your kid's best friend's parents and like set a rule being like, okay, we're making a pact. We're not getting our kids smartphones until they're in grade 9. And like if none of them have them, if none of them have TikTok, if none of them have Instagram, they're not going to feel left out. And I love that. Because mm-hmm. one of the things I was thinking of is like, what if your kid's the only one that doesn't have social media? Then there's going to be weird social repercussions from that too.
I almost wish there was like, in schools, there was something where it was like common knowledge that like, you know, like we got sent home a letter not too long ago that was like the Play-Doh Club. You know? And I was like, sure, why not?
Like, but so like, wait, is Milo on the Play-Doh Club now?
For sure.
I love it.
But like, let's say grade 6, grade 7, maybe parents start to get some resources about like, you know, your child might be starting to ask for a smartphone soon or to join social media. Like, here's what we know, here's what we recommend at the school. And then it's more so going to get a larger group of parents on board. Like, it's, and I honestly think this is coming. Like, I honestly think all of this stuff is coming. It's just like, how soon yeah. can we get it implemented? Like, yeah. the school boards suing the social media companies. Did you hear about that?
In Canada or in the States?
Ontario.
Oh, no way.
There's I didn't know about this. Oh my God. There's 4 school boards. One of them is like Peel, like Mississauga or Brampton or something. 4 school boards in Ontario are suing like TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram,
wow,
Facebook for basically creating like addicting social media platforms that is interfering with how children are learning. Like, mm. their social skills, because teachers are the ones that are seeing this all play out, you know, and they're struggling to teach kids. Kids are saying they can't read because their attention, like one of the things that he brought up that I thought was so interesting was it was something to do with the attention fragmentation.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That was interesting because kids are not able to focus on tasks for any length of time. So anyways, the school boards are suing. I don't know what's going to come out of it, but in my mind, like I made a reel or something saying to start, like, why can't the school boards ban phones from being in school? Smartphones.
They kind of have. And then it's not possible because parents get involved and parents get angry.
And here's what I think about this. I think the parents that get angry are just the loud parents.
Yeah. Well, that's usually how it is.
Exactly. There's a few that are like, oh, no way. Like, fuck this. And I get it. Get your kid a flip phone then. If you have to have constant like communication yeah. or you worry about their safety, like I've had parents say like in the US, like there's school shootings. Like yeah. I would never send my kid without a phone, like then get a flip phone. Yeah. They don't need a smartphone. They don't need a fucking laptop in their pocket.
So what I have seen over the last decade of working with teenagers, and it's been getting worse and worse, right? And then I compare it to my own high school, but it's like, so having a phone, that computer in their freaking pocket, first thing it does, bad self-image and ability to kind of perceive how they are amongst their peers, because they're always comparing and there's always something going on. So that's number one. And when they're going through puberty, number two is that it's just like bullying that people can't see. And it's often so much more vicious than real life bullying, like real world bullying. The third thing, and I don't know how this is going to look for like this generation's future, but they are unable, because, you know, I even think about how I use phones. Like Shane and I will be sitting there, I'll be talking about an actor, and I'm like, what do you think his net worth is? And then Shane will pull up his phone and we'll have a guessing game about the net worth. And then we have that information in 2 minutes. And it's yeah. like information is so easy to come by that they can't even form opinions. Like I will ask a high school student, what color is the sky? We all know it's blue, but it's like they have to pull out their phone to ensure that somebody else says it's blue before they feel comfortable saying it's blue. So they can't think critically. They can't come up with their own opinions. And then they're scared to say their own opinions. So it's like so many different ways. It's so multifaceted. The ways that phones and just technology in that sense are destroying their ability to develop. And like,
it's interesting because what you just said about like the not wanting to give their opinion, or they want to make sure that everyone else is on board with what they're about to say. That's literally social media.
100%. Where do they get that trepidation from? You know what I mean? It's from that. And like, does it not make anybody stop and think and get a little freaked out when it's like all the Silicon Valley people, like all their kids, they create our technology. They create this addictive stuff. Their kids go to these like highly specialized zero technology schools where they have to look things up. They're not allowed to write with a computer. And it's like ages ago, I stopped, even before ChatGPT and everything. I mean, like 10 years ago, I wasn't even letting kids write essays with computers. They were doing it pen to paper at their desk because I wanted to see what they thought of things. And they gave me such a hard time about it. And I was like, no, you're not allowed to take them home. You're doing them here. No help other than the books that you have at your disposal, whatever. And it was bizarre to them. But it scares me that so many of them can't do that. Like, it's just weird. It's so weird. Maybe that's because I'm, you know, university. Like, I went through academia. Like, I went through poring over, you know, hundreds of books to find that one quote that was good for an essay. And I lived that life. But I do think there's a benefit to that. Like, I truly do. Mm-hmm. I think there's benefit to knowing information right away, too, though.
I feel like everything in the world is like on this pendulum. And like before the internet, we were over here, and then the internet came and social media, and now we're over here, and we just need to get back to the middle. Like, that's it. Using technology for like benefits in a way that benefits us, that doesn't harm us. And like, I don't know where social media falls into this. It's actually very interesting. Like, I know it's our job. Like, it's
there are positive aspects to it. All the things that you can learn and do and connect with people about that you might not connect, especially maybe you live in a small town. Like, there are so many positives. So then what do you do as a parent? Do you just like know their password and you're always logging in? And but you don't want to do that. Like, how do you?
Setting boundaries, setting time limits. Like, I don't know. But honestly, it pisses me off because like, don't tell me there's not a way to set up social media so that it's teenager friendly to where parents can monitor everything that's going on. Like, we can do it. Like, give me a break. Like, oh my God, Mark Zuckerberg. Like, come on.
They're building a space hotel. They can do this. They can block pedos. Clearly, this is an issue of mine. They can block pedos from Instagram if they can build a freaking space hotel for millionaires.
Exactly.
Have you seen the bunker that Mark Zuckerberg is currently building himself? He's building a doomsday bunker. Okay.
Oh, no.
Like underground, but it's like high tech. It's got everything. It's got food supply in like powdered form for, you know, 25 years. Like, he can freaking, if he can do that, spend, you know, $3 billion on doomsday bunker, he can ensure social media is a safer space for kids. It's bizarre.
1,000%. But there is also the parents' part. There's like the school's part. Mm-hmm. It's like a collective. Like, he kept using the word collective in that episode because it's not something that like any one person can do. It's like a collective. It's like a shift of like all of society and how we view social media and smartphones.
Is this not the village we talk about? It takes a village to raise kids. It might not be in, you know, oh, I'll hold your baby while you take a nap. Maybe the village comes in this way in 2024, in working together so we make sure our kids aren't totally fucked up by social media.
Yeah. You know what I saw on the news this morning?
Tell me.
Like, they were debating raising the age of, like, drinking age in Canada to 21. And I was like, is this what we're talking about today?
This is hilarious. First of all,
like, I'm pretty sure if you look at the research, where they don't have high drinking ages, like Europe, and they treat alcohol not as this thing that should be like locked up and it's, you know, like, it's just a casual thing. There's no problem. People aren't getting blackout drunk.
No, because they don't feel like this is so funny you bring this up, because I had that question for my question segment. Somebody was like, oh, my friend gives their kids like a sip of wine at dinner. Like, I think this is wrong. Is this like, what are your thoughts? And I'm like, I'm the kid that grew up having sips of wine at dinner. And then by the time I was 14, I was having a glass of wine at dinner for fancy dinners on occasions. And so did all my European friends. You know, if their parents or grandparents came from Italy or Poland or wherever, they were doing the same thing. So it was nothing new to me. And my friends who kept that as like such a taboo thing, something they were to never even talk about or ask their parents questions about, they were the ones that flunked out of university because they couldn't stop partying. You know what
literally.
I mean?
Literally.
Yes.
I know. I was like, okay. Literally. So like the entire world is talking about all this research on how like detrimental social media is for kids. We know that the higher the drinking age, the more drinking problems there are. Should we raise the drinking age in Canada? Like, I was like, guys, you're missing what's happening in the world right now.
Also, like, we want our kids to get out there. Let my kids go to a bush party with, you know, all model safe alcohol drinking in front of them at home by showing them that it's not the center of the party. It's something to accompany dinner or accompany a nice time. And then we want our kids to be outside more. Go to the bush party with a couple of brewskis with your friends, okay? Don't sit there on social media photoshopping your waist and your nose and whatever it is. I'd prefer that. Does that make me a boomer? Like, I sound like a boomer when I say these things.
No.
Do you feel like you're... No, you don't think?
No, I think it's just we have now seen the two different kinds of lives, right? And how it plays out. And it's, yeah, I feel so badly for especially parents who are already in it with their like 18, 19 year old. Like, how do you even,
because now it's an addiction terrible. You have to wean them from. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. It's
and
so
even
hard.
Parents right now that have like 12 and 13 year olds, because you know, everybody else has a smartphone and you don't want them to be left out socially on social media platforms. Like
100%. And this is why I personally love the idea of the pact, getting together with your kids, friends, parents, whatever, and making a pact so that they're all in the same situation and they got each other if they ever feel excluded from another group. I love that. And Renee, I feel bad because I told you a half hour. I've already gone past that. And I still want
I'll talk forever.
No, I like that because I will too. I don't want to be greedy with your time because number one, I just like chatting with you. And number two is I like podcasting. So this is good.
Yeah.
And I was thinking too, I think the last time I had you on, I think it was kind of like super formal because I don't know if I knew you that well. I can't remember.
I was just thinking as I was walking down to my little studio in the basement, I was like, oh my God, like you have to come on the mom room. And like, we could even do an in-person one in my studio here.
Can we do one in person? I would, Renee. Yes. Yes. I will bring the wine or tea or whatever, whatever you want.
Okay, that'll be fun.
I'll bring it. That would be so much fun. I would love it. But the one thing that I want to get to before I let you leave, because you've been so gracious with your time. Lucy asked me this weekend, she looks at me in the eye, she goes, mommy, you need to tell me the truth. And she's saying it exactly like this. You need to tell me the truth. Is the Easter Bunny real? Or did Babcha, who's my mother, did Babcha leave out the candy? You have to tell me the truth. And I look at her and I go, okay, I'll tell you the truth, Lou. The truth is that if you don't believe in the magic doesn't happen. So I'm like trying to find creative ways to answer this. And it was stressing me out because she asked the question after school on a Friday. So I'm like, which little kid said something? Trying to ruin it for the other kids, somebody with an older sibling or something. And then I could tell, like, I know she loves Santa Claus more than anybody. She loved St. Patrick's Day. I didn't do this as a kid. She like made a leprechaun hut and I made the leprechaun go pee in the potty, pissed green. It was like weird and gross, whatever. They loved it. She loves the Easter Bunny. I didn't want to ruin this for her before she even doesn't have an experience with the tooth fairy. Like, she hasn't even lost a tooth yet. I want her to have that magic. Like, why not let it is my take. But I want to know your approach to this, because you and your husband, you guys are both very analytical. I like this. So I want to know how analytical thinkers do it.
It's interesting. Like, we definitely put out there that like the Easter Bunny's coming, or like, oh, Santa's coming, like we have to go to sleep. It's usually to get him to go to sleep. And he's still at an age where he wants to believe that it's true. So he's never really pushed us that much on like, is this actually true? Or I like how you answered it though. Like, if you believe in the magic, like that's a good answer, I think. That's
what my mother tells me, and I still get an Easter basket. So, I mean,
yeah,
I'm keeping the belief going personally.
We saw, it was so cute because we went for a walk on Easter just in our neighborhood, and a bunny like ran across the road.
That's fun.
And I was like, oh, and Milo was like, the Easter bunny. And I was like, oh my. But
that's so cute.
He like, I think he does question it, but he does still believe it because he hasn't pressed us on it, and he still thinks things are like fun. Like he makes little comments about like, oh, like, and then Santa like came here, or like he'll be like, yeah, I think I heard them last night, or you know what I mean? Like
Lucy told us she saw the sleigh, like she's got like a little skylight in her room, she's like, I saw it, it went past the moon, I saw it. And we're like, did you really, Lucy? And she's like, yep, I promise. And we're like, this is the cutest lie, like I love it. She's in the make-believe. And I read from, because you can, you know, you research anything online, you'll find an opinion that aligns with your own. So that's what I was doing. Yeah. But I found an opinion that aligned with my own. It said, you're just entering their world of make-believe. It's not a lie. You are playing. And hey, and this goes with the other conversation we're having. It just goes into that world of make-believe and allowing real life to kind of be magical. And you can't get that if you're on a phone.
Also, like, can we just all admit that's like a lie is not like, what is the intent with the lie? Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to give you a shit ton of presents under a tree. Like, is that really going to harm you? Like, are you going to be messed up as an adult?
Do you
because know? I told you that Santa was coming?
And that's like, what some parenting experts who want to sell you courses, by the way, are going to be telling you. They're going to say that you lying to your kid about Santa Claus is going to disintegrate the trust that they're building with you. So you shouldn't. And I've seen this so many times online, so many times, like from, you know, parenting coaches, from influencers, from comment section, regular people that are parents, whatever, commenting. And I'm like, is it going to, like, is my trust disintegrated with my parents? Do I know anybody who actually hates their parents? And you ask them why they hate their parents and they say, well, they told me Santa Claus was real and he wasn't. Like, what freaking 30-year-old is saying that? I want to know.
You know what, though? We need to put out our own parenting theory.
Yes.
That people who grow up whose parents didn't make Santa and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy a big deal, they're going to feel betrayed by their parents, because then they're going to find out that all their friends did have this magical childhood with like Easter Bunny and Tooth Fairy. Like, what about that?
Why didn't you create the magic for me, mommy?
Yeah.
Look at the bottom line. All of our kids are going to go and complain about us in therapy one day, no matter what we do. They're all going to spend hundreds of dollars complaining about us for one thing that we have inadvertently done.
But I guarantee you it will not be Santa and the Easter Bunny.
Hell no. That's going to be the one thing that they hang on like, to.
Like, you need to send me this content because I would love to stitch it.
100, please, 100%. But I do think it is ridiculous. And I think that people overanalyze so much in parenting. And again, just to draw it back to that first talk, people overanalyze so much when it comes to like the little micro things we do in parenting, but then ignore something as easy as, I don't know, figure it out for yourself, go outside. And I think that's something that I know I could be doing more and want to, especially as they get older. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I liked what he pointed out at the beginning, and this is like a good, it's something that like a theme that always comes up in my episodes when I talk about certain things. And he explained it in a little bit of a different way, but he was saying like, as a child, one major thing that happens or like a really difficult experience is not really going to do much to you like long-term. It's more so about the patterns and the things that are being done repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And so that he tied into, like, you know, screens and smartphones and versus these experiences playing outside and imaginative play and all that kind of stuff. And that's how we kind of talk about, like, sleep training or, you know, like all of those things. It's like, it's more so like what is happening thousands and thousands of times over and over again. Like, that is what is shaping someone and wiring their brain or, you know, affecting development. It's not like the one thing that happened one week.
Yeah. Yeah. When I let my kid cry it out and put themselves to bed, I didn't F them up forever. They're not going to be a serial killer.
No.
This is good to know. They're I'm glad that she's not killing squirrels in the backyard when I let her out to play.
No, she's just lying about seeing Santa fly across the moon.
Damn it. No, that's pretty good parenting. I can be happy with that. But Renee, thank you so much. It's now been like basically an hour. Renee, thank you so, so much. Seriously.
Thank you for having me. This was fun. We got to do like swaps more often. Like, why not?
I'm down. I get tired of talking to just Shane. Shane, I love you, but I do get tired of it. This is so nice for Renee.
Poor Shane. Shane, do you want to come on the mom room?
No, he will come too. He will come on the mom room too. It'll be fun. But yeah, thank you so much, Renee. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks. So my recording on my recording device, the card filled up midway, I think, with Renee. So I'm going to finish the rest of this on Zoom, but we're going to head over to the mailbag segment. So this is where you guys write in questions and I answer them to the best of my knowledge, or I do some research and I find that out for you. So the first question I've got, with the passing of Shane's mom, has that changed your ideas for wills or end of life? It has only kind of reinforced the fact that I need a will. And I need a very clear will. I don't want anything to be left up for debate or anything like that. But we don't have wills. We've talked about this on this podcast before. We don't have wills. This is something we desperately need to do. And it's awful. Like, we need to get on that. We should absolutely have a will. Like, we travel without the kids sometimes. And I get so nervous thinking, like, is the house going to go to them if we die and we don't have a will? Like, I don't know how this works. So I think Wealth Simple does wills, like, online. I know there are other will services online. So I'm going to have to get on top of that because that's going to be really important. The next question. I have some family members who let their kids have a touch of wine during holidays and occasions. What's your take on this? So this is a question that I brought up to Renee when she brought up alcohol. So some countries in Europe, I think Germany even, you can be sold wine and beer as young as 16, and then it's perfectly legal to be drinking wine and beer, or maybe a spirit, I don't know, as long as you're on private property and you're 14, but like really young. And, you know, I think that for some people this can, and in some countries it's been shown to increase dependency on alcohol later in life, and obviously like lowers, you know, teen drunk driving accidents and things. But I think that if your parents are teaching you how to drink responsibly, if there's alcohol on the table as an accompaniment with dinner or just a nice time, and it's not the center of the party and you can have fun without it. And if you're not showing your kids, you know, drinking when you're stressed or sad or angry, and that it's just a nice thing that can be enjoyed responsibly, I think that is actually so important. And I know I enjoyed my parents kind of raising us like that. I had, you know, some negative experiences with alcohol, but not even close to those of my friends who were totally, you know, who it was totally taboo for and who never got the chance to even really talk about it with their parents. So I personally do think it is kind of important to model that behavior. Like, you model moral behavior for your kids all the time. Why not model, if you do drink alcohol, why not model healthy relationships with alcohol? Not over drinking, not letting it consume the party, not, you know, you can have a good time without it, and showing that as well. But I do think that is really important. The next question. I don't have kids yet. What's the grossest thing about being a parent? Bodily fluids, right? Like it has to be. Definitely bodily fluids. Like the amount of times that I have either hot puke in my bare hands, gotten poop on me, maybe like even put my hands down, like my fingers down the back of a diaper, just like stupidly to see if it felt heavy, and then the poop shot up and gets all over my hand. Like, that's so gross, guys. I'm over this phase. We don't, you know, have poopy diapers anymore, but that's happened so many times. We're like sucking. Okay, this is so gross. When the kids were babies, if I couldn't find my nose burrito, which is essentially a device that you put in your kid's nose on one hand, and then on the other, you suck the air, and then it brings the snot, but it catches it in a little filter. So you're just like sucking the air. You're not getting the snot in your mouth. But a couple times, like we're camping or on vacation, and I didn't have the nose burrito with me, and the kids were little babies and they can't blow their nose or anything. So I straight up sucked the snot from their noses. And you know what? Like, it's only gross in retrospect, because it did not faze me at all. Like, I did not care. I was just, oh, okay, I'm helping my kid breathe. Like, I felt good about it. I felt like Superwoman. But yeah, in retrospect, it's all very disgusting. And the final question I have, you recently got into fantasy novels. Has this had any negative impact on your marriage? And I think this stems from the episode that Shane and I, we spoke about fantasy and romance novels, and how for some people, it does have a negative impact on their marriage, because how does Shane stand up to, you know, cash in or resand from a Sarah J. Maas book? Like, he can't. But that's just, it's fiction, it's fantasy, it's romance. And honestly, they have only done positive things for my marriage, truly. And I'm not even kidding you. Like, they make you feel, get ready for intimacy. It is a fun kind of way to be flirty or be naughty, like, oh, babe, read this passage or whatever. And it kind of gets you excited for those things. And I think that it can be really beneficial for, you know, let's say a mom in her mid-30s who's, you know, exhausted at the end of the day. And I could see how it would go the opposite way for some people. But at that point, like any addiction, like a social media addiction, whatever, you have to be like, okay, I'm putting too much of my life into this. I'm losing myself too much into these people, these characters. The people of my own life are, you know, becoming less meaningful or less desirable. And you need to be self-aware enough to recognize that. But as it is for me right now, it's all good, baby. And folks, that's where we are going to call it quits tonight. So I missed Shane, but I was so happy that Renee was able to step in and do this one with me. I had a blast. I hope you guys had a great time. And thank you so much for listening to this Family Tree podcast, episode 202.